This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 49 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're doing this a little early tonight, huh, Max? Because both of us are in the middle of thunderstorms. Must be the summer.
That's right. Between the thunderstorms and the fact that it's, when we're recording this, it's the day before the 4th of July, and some folks are out there with their fireworks already. We may get a little extra noise in this show, but hopefully that won't be too much. But David, you know, it's another week, another mountain of UAV topics in the news. And this will be our second episode of the week. We had Dr. Evan Ulrich on earlier with his monocopter.
It was truly awesome. We were both blown away by it. And I think our enthusiasm comes out in the interview, but yeah. And so if there's anybody out there like that, let's just, off the top of the show, we'll just say, get a hold of us. We'd love talking to you about something as really cool as a monocopter or whatever new product that you have possibly coming out. But we've got a lot to talk about tonight. We've got a Chinese menu of Peking UAVs and General Tso's UCAVs, and UAVs are evidently taking off in China. Then we've got spying on naked women or naked steelwork. You want to know the regs for UAVs in your state? Well, we've got a map for that. Of course, we can't go without the FAA drinking game. So in this week, we've got them subpoenaing realtors, and they might not make their 2015 deadline. All that, plus the video of the week. So I guess we better get started. It's a full news week. Our first story comes from English.CRI.CN. Drone hobbyists are taking off in China. Evidently, UAVs are popping up in China, like we talk about a lot on the Airplane Geeks, about Chinese segments in aviation growing, be it civilian or be it airliners or even military. They're trying to keep up with the rest of us.
That's right. This article talks about an individual, a 23-year-old, Jin Xing, and he kind of represents some of the activity that's going on there. He's created his own company. It's the first company he's ever created. It's Butterfly Aerial Photography Workshop, and he operates this business from his home. He has a partner that works with him, and they take aerial photographs for client companies. They have six helicopters that they're using, so this is more than just a little tiny small-time operation.
Of course, China has all sorts of privacy issues and air traffic issues, and I would love to know how well they do flying in all that pollution and smog, which is China is now notorious for. So it's clearly, as we've said over the last year, almost this week, UAVs are a global phenomenon, and even in China, they're seeing the potential of the small UAVs. But then there's the whole thing about, well, China's a pretty close slate. What's the regulations? And Max, you did a little research on that.
Yeah, and I came up pretty dry, too. I was trying to find out what is the regulatory environment in China for UAVs. And I had trouble finding much good information. It did seem like Shanghai now seems to prohibit UAV flights. But other than that, I really couldn't find too much. So if any of you listening have any more information or an inside view of what the regulation situation is like in China, then please let us know.
Absolutely. So I guess we'll move on to our next story. A little bit of throwing the curtains open and seeing a drone outside your door now. Evidently, a woman called the cops because she was scantily clad and evidently, she threw open her curtains on her 26th floor apartment, thinking that nobody was going to see her. And sure enough, what did she see? She saw a little quadcopter out there. And she immediately assumed that it was, of course, taking pictures of her.
That's right. And really all it was a company called Skyris Imaging. And they were out there taking some video, a panoramic video for a developer. And they discovered that this story was in the press. The press, of course, went kind of wild with this one. And the police were looking for the operator of the UAV. And so these folks from Skyris Imaging saw the news, said, well, that's us. And so they contacted the police and said, well, that's us. And so they explained that to the police. And in the end, it kind of worked out. And everyone was pretty much happy.
If you're scantily clad on the 26th floor and you see a drone out there, I don't think you actually spend enough time to figure out that the camera was pointed in the opposite direction. So I sort of can't blame the woman, but it looks like this one turned out for the best, and our wrongfully accused drone can go on to foam other development sites, though one wonders if the FAA will now be monitoring SkyirisImaging.com to see if they're selling those photographs. But more on that later.
Our next story comes from MarketWatch. This is the blog for MarketWatch, and it's titled, Are Drones Illegal in Your State? This map can tell you. This is a pretty handy little thing, and of course, it's just limited to the United States. But what it does is it lets you click on the state of your choice on this map, and then it presents you with the legislation, proposed legislation, some links to websites associated with that activity, a description of the legislation, and information like that. So it's kind of fun, kind of interesting. I don't know if you played with it at all, David.
I did. Of course, I went and checked Pennsylvania, and I was sort of pleasantly surprised at what here in the Commonwealth, we're not a state. The proposed legislation is law enforcement will be able to use UASs in emergencies, major disasters, or Amber Alerts. So they're looking at it from a safety concern. Now, doesn't say anything about commercial operations, but I am kind of pleasantly surprised that Pennsylvania, who usually is backwards on everything, we still have state stores that sell liquor, and we don't have anything like that, but they're actually being thoughtful about it and looking at it from an emergency and helping our fire and police do it. So I'm sure you checked out Connecticut, huh?
Yeah, and with a somewhat different result. I was disappointed. It noted that there's some legislation that's been introduced in Connecticut. It says the Connecticut State House is considering a bill that would establish the crime of criminal use of an unmanned aircraft. This bill, it says, it would require persons convicted of using an unmanned aircraft equipped with a deadly weapon to register under the Deadly Weapon Offender Registry. Really? Seriously? This is what the legislatures are spending their time on? I mean, it's crazy. If you have something that governs the use of deadly weapons, why do you need to carve out drones and say, well, we need something separate for that? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I don't know where this comes from. I haven't looked into the background of it, so maybe there's some legitimacy behind it, but it sure doesn't sound that way to me. And I think that's a feature that we see across many of the states in the U.S. where the legislators are trying to do something. In many cases, it has to do with privacy, though, and that I can see. I mean, at least I can understand why they'd be involved in that.
Yeah, well, but, you know, this is the Connecticut legislature that has decided the Wright brothers aren't the people who flew for the first time.
Gustav Whitehead.
I have to get that in there. But Jonesy from Australia commented, he's from Australia and he likes watching the U.S. tear itself apart over UAVs. There's some truth to that we have a lot of people here in the States who feel obligated to do something because the FAA is doing nothing. But you should check out your own states. And one of the things we've always told everyone to do is be proactive. Go right. talk to your state senators. And if anything, use it as a tool to educate so that they can legislate intelligently. You know, legislating without any real knowledge and just assumptions is a really terrible thing to do. And unfortunately, the universe abhors a vacuum. And right now, we have a lot of legislatures that are doing this kind of thing. And it's really not their position to do it. The FAA controls the airspace. So what happens when they actually do something? Do we have all these lawsuits over states' rights versus federal government? It'll be interesting.
So. Yeah, it could get messy.
Speaking of the FAA, this was from inman.com. Drone Rangers slap realtors. We actually got this article first from Doug Grace. Thanks, Doug. The FAA, we talked about, changed their regulations about toys and model aircraft. And now they're sort of leveraging that to all of a sudden we have a bunch of subpoenas going out, huh?
Yeah, and real estate is a target. Real estate, of course, is one of the big industries, the big segments where there's a lot of obvious benefit to using UAVs. Agriculture, of course, being another one, fire rescue, those sorts of services being another. But we see here that the FAA has been issuing these subpoenas to real estate brokerages that have been using UAVs to take photos of properties. The FAA is saying that even if you take some photos of a property and give it to a realtor and there's no money exchanging hands, the FAA is saying that that's not allowed. So, here we have the FAA going after an industry segment. Now, you know, the film industry, they kind of got themselves together and approached the FAA, as we've talked about previously, looking for COAs that would allow them to do this. The real estate industry, as far as I can tell, is not doing that or has not done that.
Well, and Max, we've talked about realtors in the past, and one of the ways they were, quote, getting out of the commercial use of UAVs was, we're only flying the quadcopter as a photographer. We're doing photo editing, and we're not charging the realtor to fly the helicopter or the UAV. We're just doing photo processing, and the FAA is now trying to completely define no means no, and any loopholes that someone comes up with, that's what they're going to go after until they come up with what they've decided is the appropriate procedure. The next step, according to the article, was cease and desist letters, and the question is, who's going to enforce them? We know of one guy in the FAA that was writing cease and desist letters. There's going to be an awful lot of letters that need to be written.
All of this is just complicated by the time it's taking to develop regulations. If we had regulations, obviously, we wouldn't be in this kind of a situation. So it is a transition period. The longer the transition period, the worse things get. That's a problem. And right now, I don't think we really see our way out of it, other than the FAA trying to keep going down the path that it's going and to sort of methodically collect data and develop the regulations, the requirements eventually. In fedscoop.com, we see FAA...
I love that name. I love that name. I'm going to start following that magazine just because I like FedScoop.
Right. Their article is FAA will not meet deadline for unmanned aircraft. What they're doing is describing a report that came from the Department of Transportation's Office of Inspector General. And this report says that the FAA will not meet the congressionally mandated September 2015 deadline to integrate unmanned aircraft systems into the national airspace. And they had a couple of interesting findings that are pretty critical of the FAA.
Yeah, the first one was the FAA has, quote, the FAA has not reached a consensus on standards for technology that would enable UAS to detect and avoid other aircraft to ensure reliable data links between ground stations and the manned aircraft they control, which I believe is what Texas is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be developing the standards for sense and avoid and control. So they haven't developed a consensus yet because we basically have only had a couple of weeks worth of testing since they're running slow.
Yeah, it's underway.
Second, FAA has not established a regulatory framework for UAS integration, such as aircraft certification requirements, standard air traffic procedures, managing UAS with manned aircraft, or adequate controller training program for the UAS. Again, that's one of the test sites is charged with doing that, and New York hasn't stood up yet officially. Third, FAA is not effectively collecting, analyzing UAS safety data to identify risks. This is because the FAA has not developed procedures for ensuring that all UAS safety incidents are reported and tracked or processed for sharing via U.S. safety data with the Department of Defense. Take the fourth one because I'm just getting exasperated.
Okay, the fourth one, they say FAA is not effectively managing its oversight of UAS operations. They say, although FAA established a UAS integration office, it has not clarified lines of reporting or established clear guidance for UAS regional inspectors on authorizing and overseeing UAS operations. The report does make 11 recommendations, and we're not going to go through all of those. Just in summary form, the recommendations include the need for certain reports, the FAA to develop milestones, timelines, to clarify responsibilities, to create process standards. They also mention more air traffic control study. They need to define the data required from the six test sites and develop metrics to measure their performance to plan. So the link in the show notes will take you to the report, which will make some interesting reading if you'd like to learn about these recommendations in more detail. Interesting, though, David, was the FAA's reaction to the report.
Surprisingly, the FAA said, yeah, you're right. We agree with you. They concurred. I guess I can equate that to when you have a problem, the first stage of recovery is acknowledging you have a problem. So while the FAA has acknowledged that they really haven't done anything yet. So, okay, now fix the problem and do something.
And you know, also what this does is it sort of legitimizes in a way the argument that the FAA is going to have to eventually make to Congress when it explains that they can't make the mandated date, right? So here we have this report. I guess you could consider this an independent report. It comes from the DOT, but it's not from the FAA. And drawing these conclusions, making these points about all the work that needs to be done, and the FAA can point to the report to Congress and say, yeah, see, these are all the things that we have to do. This is how hard this problem is, how complicated it is, and this is why we can't make the September 2015 deadline. I mean, it kind of gives them an out.
Agreed. But let's talk about some other news. Our last story for today actually came from Mark Labrowski, and this was from General Aviation News. Clever copters can learn as they fly. University of Sheffield, Department of Automatic Control and Systems Engineering, is researching quadcopters that can learn from their environment.
This is really cool, David. These are flying robots. They use camera images and they build up a 3D map of their environment. And then they have other sensors, things that detect barometric pressure, things that record ultrasonic information. And then all this goes into the autopilot software and is used for navigation within the environment. This thing can detect where it is eventually as it learns where it is and maneuver through it, take action required. The sort of the use case for this is that you can have robots that enter an environment, learn to identify objects, other features of the environment, and make decisions themselves. So that's about as autonomous as you get, I guess.
Yeah, and wonder if they're going to subscribe to the three laws of robotics.
Yes, keep that in mind. That's right.
You know, it just means Skynet's coming a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
To think that a little quadcopter can figure out where it is and what it's doing and start moving itself through space, it's pretty awesome technology.
All right, David, is it time for the video of the week?
I think it is. And this one, I think, was sent to us by Paul Siebert. And a month or so ago, we had that lovely footage of those big, tall yachts in Dana Point. Well, another gentleman was flying his drone over a harbor and then proceeded to watch as a $24 million boat or yacht at $24 million. It's not hardly a boat.
You can't call it a boat. That's right.
You can't call it a boat. And it started to engulf in flames. So he got video of it. And this was in Chula Vista, California.
Yeah. And it was just by chance, I think, that he was flying his quadcopter, that this other boat captain was flying his quadcopter. And he was looking at shooting some aerial footage at this shipyard. And he comes upon this big plume of smoke. And I'll tell you, that fiberglass and all the other materials that go into a ship like this, when they burn, that makes a lot of smoke and a lot of fire. And this thing was totally, fully engulfed. So this guy got some dramatic footage. You know, I'm looking at this, David, or when I was looking at this, I'm thinking, where's the fire department? And if you look really carefully, you can see some fire trucks around it, and the perspective, they're so small because this boat is so huge. And I think it was just too much to try to address the fire when it was at that stage. But it's pretty dramatic footage.
So I guess now it's time for that part of the show that we get so much of and we love so much. And you can always send your feedback to feedback@theuavdigest.com. But our first one, Max thought it was funny. Ben thought it was funny. I not so much. And it was the Washington Post article, which was the second one from we talked about last week. We talked about their first hit piece about accidents in the Department of Defense. Well, they followed it on with the transcripts of those incidents. And it can be quite humorous, though kind of distressing. It does clearly illustrate the lack of sense or tangibility that some of these accidents were part of. That, you know, if you're in an aircraft and you're a pilot and you're about to crash, yeah, you use language and expletives, etc., but you have a real grasp of what's going on. These are kind of different and awkward in ways.
I think they're hysterical. So we're not going to go through these, but I think it's worth taking a look at these. Click on the link in the show notes. But like David says, this is the recorded audio of the operator just before crashes. I'll do one because I can't resist. This is from the pilot of a Predator that crashed actually in Nevada in 2013. And this is what the operator says, what the pilot's saying. He's saying, "This thing's kind of climbing like a pig. Climb, you pig. Boy, this is going to be tight. Okay. Interesting. We're falling out of the sky." And that's a crash. So there's a bunch of these. I know David doesn't like this stuff so much, but
I don't get me wrong. I laughed, and maybe we need to do a audio show where we do the quotes. My problem is yes, they are humorous, but that isn't the way the Washington Post is presenting it. I know that that's your newspaper of record growing up there, Mr. Flight, but they really are out to do a hit piece on the military drone programs.
Well, we also heard from a Christian in Germany. He sent us two interesting links. One is to the sail drone, which is not an aircraft, but it's for the surface of the ocean, used for ocean science applications. And he also sent a link to the Aerovel Flex Rotor. And this is a fixed wing, vertical takeoff and land tail sitter that looks kind of interesting.
It's designed for autonomous operation, and we hope it follows the three laws of robotics, and in sites with restricted access. So it's designed to be flown in closed environments and environments where you would not fly a normal UAV. So definitely check out that video. Then we got an email from Scotland and Harry Giles. And we've talked about how UAVs are changing things and how they affect people. Well, I guess when we started this a year ago, Max, I'll be honest, we didn't ever expect to get UAV poetry, but we got some, and it's actually quite fun.
Yeah, Harry has been creating this poetry. I think he's a poet. He's also a performer, and he follows UAVs, the news, sort of avidly, he says. And he decided, or he had the idea to create a series of poems that sort of personalize a particular UAV and describe in poetry the life of this UAV. So this is really different. This is something that is probably unlike almost anything you've run across before, but it's kind of fascinating. We'll put a link to Harry's website in the show notes, of course. Take a look. For some people, this just won't be their cup of tea. For other people, this will be intriguing. And I just found it sort of, in some ways, kind of captivating. But it's definitely an artistic and creative endeavor combining UAVs and poetry.
One of the things he said was he sort of now has this mentally, this living, breathing UAV who he shows up in. Sometimes he needs to get it out, the stories get out. And I understand where he's coming from, because on Airplane Geeks, I have little Susie, our SR-22 Cirrus, that goes off on her little adventure. So I really got where Harry was coming from with this. And if anything, everybody should at least give it a try. You might be pleasantly surprised.
We also got an email from Tim Trott. Tim, you recall, is from Southern Helicam, and he was pointing out some things that he has on his website, and so I took a look, and I found something that I thought was fascinating, and it turned out to not be what Tim was trying to point me to, but what I found that was fascinating was a sectional that includes unmanned aircraft activity. So the sectionals, they're, if you're not familiar with them, they're charts that are used in the U.S., that aid pilots flying under VFR, visual flight rules. And this particular little chart shows miscellaneous activity that you might want to look out for. So it's got hang glider activity, it's got ultralight activity, glider operations, parachute jumping areas, things like that. These are little symbols that are used on maps. And one of them is unmanned aircraft activity. So I guess, hey, we've made the sectionals. That sounds pretty pretty great.
What I was very impressed with was that you were skeptical enough to contact our two pilots over on Airplane Geeks. It's been years since I've looked at a sectional. So I was like, next thing you know, we had these very in-depth discussions about sectionals. So but this has been vouched for by two very famous pilots, Max Takeoff and Rob Mark over at the Airplane Geeks. So they validated this. So, and then speaking of airplanes, this one was from Jalopnik. Airbus wants to take the cockpit out of the cockpit of an airplane. Originally, the article said the Airbus has received a patent, but we've actually gone and found out that they've actually just submitted a request. They want to move the cat, and I feel bad for the pilots that this is what Airbus thinks of them, but they want to move the pilots down to the baggage hold.
Yeah, the idea here is that the pilots are not up front, not looking out the windows, but are in some other location in the airplane and are flying the airplane by basically first-person view, using only sensors and screens and that sort of thing. You have to be careful about patents, or in this case, applications. The state of the industry is such that if you have any idea, even if it's completely harebrained, even if it's not anything you think you might actually manufacture or develop, you still go after the patents, because who knows what it'll be like in the future, and somebody else may come up with some idea, then you say, well, we have that patented, or we can license that idea. So it's really impossible to tell whether Airbus really, really expects to fly A320s or A380s with remotely situated pilots, let's say. Or on the other hand, it could be just the first step in a sequence of events that leads to pilotless airliners.
the second photograph that we'll have in the show notes does kind of look like the bridge of the USS Enterprise.
It does. This is a line drawing from the patent application.
I mean, you get a wraparound screen with a wraparound console, which with what looks to be a swivel chair, with slightly behind them is a, I guess that would be where the first officer sits, in a tandem thing with another nice big console with another swivel chair, and behind them is a row of desks and a Vulcan. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not in the picture, but we've seen the future. You know, the Star Trek, they navigated on the bridge, not through windows, but through a giant video screen.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that far-fetched, and, you know, we have flip phones because the guy that designed the flip phone liked communicators from Star Trek, and like you said, it's somebody putting it out there, and it may never happen, but it's kind of a neat progression if you think about it. If you put them in the hold, you never see them, so people get comfortable. Eventually, people don't miss the pilots up front. You know, right now, they sort of don't miss the pilots up front because they're behind a giant armored door.
Right.
You know, okay, so now they're secured downstairs in their own little cockpit, and they don't need to be behind a giant armored door. And supposedly it's going to make the nose of the aircraft more efficient. And then eventually they just sort of disappear. Now, I don't understand the whole putting them in the tail thing. That's also in this, but you never know. I keep telling people that I'd fly on an airliner without pilots. I'll volunteer for that duty. I'm sure my wife will not be happy about it, but I'll volunteer for it. But I think we're rapidly running out of time, Max.
So you've been listening to episode 49 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com, and you can go straight to the show notes for this episode with all the links for the stories and other things we talked about at theuavdigest.com/49.
You can find us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/UAV Digest, and of course on Twitter at UAV Digest. And of course, we love our swag, and you can definitely, not that it gets us a lot of money or anything like that, but definitely you can promote us by buying something and wear a UAV Digest t-shirt and get somebody into a conversation and convert them over from a dronophobe to a UAV lover.
Okay, this is Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly. Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.